the Affordable Care Act was written in a way where they intended for these people to get covered by Medicaid, and because Alabama did not do that, did not expand Medicaid because of the Supreme Court ruling, there are people that are falling through the cracks, and you've spoken to those people. What are you hearing from these people?
Well, this is truly one of the biggest unintended consequences of the act, because as you mentioned, the authors in Congress meant for all of these people below a certain income to be covered by Medicaid, so they put the floor at just 133% above the poverty line for subsidies on the healthcare exchange. So if you fall below that, you're in this odd situation where you're too poor for the subsidies, but you're too rich for Medicaid because the Supreme Court said that states don't have to go along with the expansion. So there's a lot of frustration, I think, is probably the most common result I've found. A lot of these folks don't really understand why they're not covered. They've heard so much about Obamacare, and they have an opportunity to get health care, and then they go in and they meet with a navigator, or they do it themselves online, and they find out that they're not eligible for a subsidy and they're not eligible for Medicaid, and a lot of people just don't have a very good understanding as to why that is. So I think that's probably the most common reaction.
And one of the things that struck me about your article was just sort of how fluid the situation is for a lot of these people, where on one hand, they're getting coverage, and then all of a sudden, some very small change occurs, and then all of a sudden, they're not getting any more coverage.
Well, this is true with the act in general. One of the features of the law is that they don't ask you for your 2013 income. They ask you for your 2014 income. So, of course, this puts people in the situation of having to guess at that. If you've got a regular, stable job you've had for years, it's pretty easy to estimate what you're going to make in the coming year. But if you're someone who switches jobs a lot, or works unevenly, had a job maybe that you lost in 2014 and are searching in 2014, it's a very tricky situation to tell the healthcare regulators how much you're going to make when you haven't made anything yet. And that's meaningful because if you guess wrong, you can face a big tax penalty in the following year. And if your estimate is off the other way, it could be that you've gotten a subsidy that you weren't entitled to because of your income. So it's a, you know, it's for people without regular stable jobs, that's a big issue.
So you talked to three people, and obviously everybody's story is unique. Is there a certain person that you talked to whose story struck you the hardest?
Well, you know, I think I talked to a lot of people, and even more than just the three that are quoted in the story, that are, you know, the classic working poor. These are people that have jobs at fast food restaurants or other kind of low wage jobs, and they don't have insurance through their employer in a lot of cases, or can't afford it, and because they do work and make an income, they're not going to be eligible in most cases for Medicaid in Alabama, which pretty much just covers the disabled, pregnant women, and mothers of infant children, and of course children are covered under all kids. So it's very difficult, a lot of single mothers, and a lot of situations where people are struggling to make ends meet, and they thought that this might be a way they could get health insurance, and now they don't. And other than that, you know, kind of typical story, I was very struck by the woman I wrote about from Lillian, Alabama, which is near the Florida border in Baldwin County. And she struck me because she was very intelligent, very articulate. She's college educated. She doesn't kind of fit the typical demographic of someone you would think of as being in this situation. But her husband had a lot of health problems. She left a really good job in Tennessee to move down here because they thought this would be a better place for her husband, and she's been trying to make a living through freelance, and it hasn't been as successful as she thought it would be. So it was very interesting to talk to her because she had a very good understanding, unlike a lot of these people, as to what was happening and why it was happening, and she was very frustrated and angry because she's not yet old enough for Medicare. And, you know, job prospects when you're in your early 60s are difficult. And, she is not able to sign up on the exchange, and she's not able to get Medicaid under the law.
So obviously, as a journalist, part of your job is to sort of separate your own emotions from the stories that you're covering, obviously. But I wonder, you know, you're talking to these people whose situations have become fairly dire, and I wonder what your sort of impression was from the story on the overall Affordable Care Act. What was your takeaway from, I guess, the reporting that you did on all of these people? Like, how do you feel?
Sure. Well, it's very difficult not to feel sympathy for people's individual cases, people who have been sick and couldn't go to the doctor, people who maybe lost health insurance because they lost a job. But my role as a reporter is just to sort of report what's going on and to keep in mind that there's always multiple sides to every story, because this issue obviously is much more than any one person's individual story. It's reordering a sixth of the American economy. It's very big. It's very complicated. When you do that, it tends to produce winners and losers. And from the state standpoint, the necessity of coming up with money to meet the state match. And there's been a lot of debate over that. There are some experts that have studied it that think that Alabama would actually come out ahead based on the fact that the federal government is going to be picking up most of the costs. Then there was a counter study by professors at Troy University that challenged that and said that actually, for whatever the merits or demerits of the law, if Alabama is expecting this to be an economic generator, they might want to think twice, because their view is that it's going to cost the state money. And this is a state, you know, that obviously right now is having a difficult time affording the Medicaid program that it already has. So, I mean, I guess that's where I come down on it. I mean, I try not to take an opinion on any kind of public policy issue that I write about, and just try to cover it as fairly as possible and give voice to all sides.
You mentioned that people were frustrated, and I imagine that there's some anger as well. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's certainly people that are upset at Governor Bentley for rejecting the expansion. There's a lot of people who think that the governor, you know, that this is just politics. You know, this is because President Obama's name is attached to the law, that this is where the obstinance is coming from. And, I think they discount any legitimate policy reason that the governor might have and says that, you know, it's politics. And I'm not going to try and ascribe motives to the governor, but I will say that it is a very political situation. I did a story that's actually on AL.com today, taking a look at the original Medicaid program, which was passed in the 1960s along with Medicare. And then, just as now, states had to decide whether they were going to adopt the program. It was voluntary then, just as it is now, and each of the 50 states had to decide whether they were going to go for it. Back then, the match was a little less generous than the expansion matches, which, as you know, it's free for the first 3 years, and then gradually it goes down to a 90-10 split, with the federal government picking up $9 out of every $10. And back in the 1960s, it was a formula based on poverty rates in the states, so it varied from state to state, but it was about 70% or so federal money in Alabama's case, and 30% state money. So I took a look at this, and a year after the original Medicaid Act passed, about half of the states had active Medicaid programs, which is very interesting because it very closely parallels the situation today. About half the states have accepted the expansion. What appears to be different, though, is that the debate seemed much less ideological. I couldn't find any instances of politicians, saying they weren't going to go for Johnson Care, for instance, in reference to President Johnson. And that was different, by the way, than Medicare, where there was kind of an ideological component. Medicare was much more controversial. But the Medicaid program for the poor, the debate was just largely over mechanics. How are we going to pay for it? What taxes are we going to raise? What are we going to do to guard against fraud? So it was very kind of a series of practical considerations, at least in Alabama. And within about 5 years, almost all of the states had signed up. And interestingly, the big holdout was Arizona, which did not adopt Medicaid until 1982. And even then, on a special waiver,
that covered much less than the other states. Arizona didn't have a full Medicaid program until 1988 or 89. So that was very interesting. You know, I think that there is something to be said. The political divisions are much stronger, and it's much more ideological now than it was back then.
And in essence, that's really leaving some people behind, because I'm guessing that the people that you talked to were less interested in the politics of the situation and more interested in how it affected their situation.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, and you know, to the extent that there was anger and they cared about politics, it was in the context of, you know, Governor Bentley, you're playing politics. I mean, that's, you know, how they feel. You know, and obviously they're looking through it through the prism of how is this affecting me personally. You know, I work hard, I have this job, I don't make enough to afford health care. This law is supposed to cover me, and now it's not. You know, and then there's a whole group of people that I think were just frustrated. You know, they weren't really interested in running around blaming particular people, maybe because they weren't even really sure who they should blame. They were just, you know, highly disappointed that they weren't able to get any help from the law. And it's a lot of people. I mean, there's a lot of people in Alabama that kind of fall in this kind of no man's land zone. And, you know, the estimates range as high as 300,000, which is the number that the governor himself has used. Other groups looking at census data and subtracting out children who are, you know, eligible for the state's All Kids program place the number around 191,000, but, you know, it's tens of thousands of people anyway just in Alabama who cannot sign up for the Medicaid program and don't earn enough to be able to make subsidies to buy a private plan on the market. And really, I mean, it's, you know, that line can be very significant, because if you make just over that threshold, in many cases, you're going to be eligible for a subsidy that's big enough to cover the entire cost of a premium for a low-cost insurance plan. So there's lots of people who are getting completely free insurance, free in the sense that they don't have a premium. That, you know, they'll, in many cases, will have to pay copays and things like that, but no month-to-month cost, and they get the insurance. Whereas if they made maybe $3,000 or $4,000 less, then they'd be shut out altogether.
So for these people who fell through the cracks, so to speak, is there just no answer for them currently?
Well, there's really no answer for them under the current law. I mean, I guess the answer would be if they could persuade the state to take the deal, and there's no deadline. I mean, you know, if Alabama decided next year or 4 years from now, hey, maybe we want this after all, then, you know, that money would still be available. Of course, if the state waits longer than 3 years, they won't get the 100% free money, but they'll still get in on a match that would be no worse than 90-10 under current law. And of course, there's the possibility they could improve their own economic situations. I mean, a lot of people are in low-wage jobs who eventually move up, and they could possibly get a job where they get employer-provided health insurance, or they could make a little bit more money and be able to buy it on their own. And other than that, you know, these folks will do what, you know, poor folks have always done without health insurance. You know, they'll go to the emergency room when they're really sick. There's a number of organizations that run health clinics geared to the poor. And, you know, I think maybe it's a misnomer that poor people don't get health care in America. They get health care. They just don't have health insurance. And, of course, this is a big reason why the hospitals are so in favor of this law, because of the money that Congress appropriates for uncompensated care in the hospitals is going away under this act, again, because the thought was all of these people will have insurance and they won't need to use the emergency rooms as much. So I think there's a lot of hospital administrators in Alabama and other states that are worried that they're still going to have to treat these folks who come in, and they're not going to have the reimbursement from the federal government. That's sort of the situation they're in.
Well, Brennan, I think those are the questions I had. Is there anything else that you want to add, I guess, specifically relating to both of the stories that you had online?
Yeah, well, you know, I would just say that the deadline for signing up and avoiding penalties is the end of the month, March 31st. But, of course, the story is not going to end there. It's really, in a lot of ways, only the beginning. There's going to be a whole year's worth of people using their new insurance, and what's their experience going to be with that? How many people who have signed up are actually going to pay? Because that's an issue. I mean, the people who are covered, it assumes they're going to follow through and pay their portion that they owe. to how many of those people are going to pay and not pay. Are people going to be hit with sticker shock when they start getting big out-of-pocket expenses for some of the lower-cost bronze plans that have low premiums but expect a lot more out-of-pocket expenses for actual trips to the doctor and things like that? And then what is the what's going to happen with the hospitals with uncompensated care and this Medicaid debate? I'm sure is not going to go away. The Democrats are sure to make it a big campaign issue in the gubernatorial race this year, and healthcare is not going away as a major point of debate just because of this law has passed.
Well, you can be sure it'll keep you busy this year.
Yeah, absolutely will.
All right. Well, thanks so much for talking to me, Brendan Kirby. I appreciate it.
Anytime. Thanks a lot.